Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Mike Brown, author, nerd, and host of the Dark Poutine podcast. Join me and Morgan Knudsen, author, paranormal researcher, and host of the TV shows Paranormal 911 and Haunted Hospitals, as we take you on a journey for the curious about the unseen, the mysterious, and the incredible things happening in the world about us. Welcome to Supernatural Circumstances. Unless you've been living under a rock, you're probably aware of the use of fancy electronic gadgetry in paranormal investigations. Movies like Ghostbusters, with all their mostly fictional gadgets, and many other films and TV shows are likely responsible for the upswing in the usage of electronic devices in these investigations. As well, improvements in technology and cheaper devices probably play a part in their rise in popularity. Some of the most commonly used electronic devices in paranormal investigations include EMF meters. They're used to detect and measure fluctuations in electromagnetic fields that are thought to be associated with paranormal activity. Digital cameras. They're used to capture still photographs of the environment. Sometimes investigators believe they can capture apparitions or other paranormal activity images. We've all seen people mistaking dust bits in the air for spiritual orbs. Audio recorders. Audio recorders are used to capture sounds and voices in the environment that is being investigated. Some investigators believe they can capture electronic voice phenomena, EVP, which are said to be the voices of spirits or ghosts. Spirit boxes. They're a type of modified radio that rapidly scans through multiple radio frequencies to create a white noise or static sound. Some investigators believe they can use spirit boxes to communicate with spirits or ghosts through white noise. Infrared cameras. They capture images in the infrared spectrum, which is invisible to the human eye. Some investigators use infrared cameras to capture images of what they believe to be paranormal activity that may not be visible in the visible light spectrum. And thermal imaging cameras are used to detect differences in temperature and can be used to identify areas that are colder or hotter than their surroundings. Some investigators believe they can use thermal imaging cameras to detect the presence of spirits or ghosts that may produce cold spots. We here at Supernatural Circumstances feel it's important to note that while these devices can be attractive to paranormal investigations, they should always be used in conjunction with other investigative techniques and with a healthy dose of skepticism. It's also important to thoroughly understand how each device works and to carefully consider any natural explanations for any activity appearing paranormal before concluding that it is actually paranormal in nature. To dig a little deeper, in this episode, we speak with Phil Wyman, a well-known figure in the paranormal genre based in the United Kingdom. Phil is the former presenter and paranormal investigator of TV's Most Haunted series. Having been investigating the paranormal and unexplained for over three decades, his knowledge of ghosts, hauntings, and the unexplained has been called upon numerous times within the media. Alongside his wife, Sarah, he directs and produces the paranormal series Are You Haunted, currently broadcasting on Pluto TV. But first, here's Morgan with more on the myths of ghost hunting gear.
From the very beginning of humanity, understanding that we are not alone in the universe, whether it be in regards to spirituality, UFOs, or psi abilities, people have been making money and faking gizmos since the very beginning. Us humans will pay just about anything to get a message from the other side, including concocting all sorts of specialized equipment or repurposing what certain equipment already does, either because we don't understand its functioning or we genuinely want to get a reaction out of others. Either way, people tend to use the unknown to satisfy our own needs for answers or fill a pocketbook. With the inception of television shows that involve ghost hunting and the promotion that the adventure is talking with the dead, the endless line of strange gadgets which has come forth from these shows has been, nearly infinite. Most of the time, when you ask creators why the lights are blinking or the gizmo is buzzing, they tell you something along the lines of, well, it's picking up on energy. Well, energy has units. It's not a blanket term. But it sure sounds sciencey. Another big buzzword has become EMF, or electromagnetic fields, and that somehow, some way, ghosts are made of EMF. We know that simply isn't factual because we don't know what these entities are, let alone what they are made from. Items like the K2 meters, which have become popular on shows like Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures, are built to measure electrical signals from your microwave, and nothing more. When they go off without provocation, as I've had happen in some very strange incidents, other avenues have to be explored, but it doesn't mean it was caused by a spirit. If you type ghost hunting gear into Google, a plethora of these creations will pop up to buy. None of them with much scientific merit, but they sure look flashy. So you might be asking, where did all this start? Well, that's a good question. A few investigators even use Geiger counters to detect ionizing electromagnetic radiation, but so far, there's no evidence to suggest that these frequencies are involved in reported paranormal experiences. Exposure to certain electromagnetic frequencies has been proposed as a factor in paranormal experiences with a sensory component, such as seeing apparitions, hearing sounds, being touched. It's also been suggested that electromagnetic fields that interact with structures or appliances, as I had mentioned before, or naturally occurring magnetic fields, actually might produce what looks like paranormal phenomenon, including object movement, light anomalies, temperature changes, and even some effects of psychokinesis, or what most people recognize as poltergeist effects. Studies have been made to explore this idea further. So maybe it can be tracked back as far as 1875, where physicists Stewart and Tate proposed that electromagnetic forces actually provide a physical connection between our world and the realm of spirit. As documented in the Sci Encyclopedia, researchers theorized that radio and other electromagnetic forms may offer a means for communicating with spirits or other dimensions. For example, the Spirit Electronic Communication Society, founded in Manchester in 1949, developed devices which it claimed could be used for this exact purpose. The group also used devices to create an energy field, and it was thought that it might assist spirit communications by stimulating people's psychic abilities. This area of research has become known as EVP, or electronic voice phenomenon. Many researchers who experimented with electronic communication methods, such as video ITC, among others, based it upon radio waves, testing methods such as shielding from electromagnetism by things like a Faraday cage. Another large source of this idea might have been Michael Persinger at the Laurentian University in Ontario, Canada. Persinger considered that electromagnetism might provide just enough energy to cause experiences such as apparitions, poltergeists, even precognition, and UFO encounters. He thought that extremely low frequencies from both natural and man-made sources might actually be a likely cause, perhaps suggesting that the study of high-voltage static electric fields and geomagnetic fields might be a worthy study. Reported phenomena during a 1996 investigation by Persinger included reports of presences, intense feelings of fear, light flashes and anomalies, and sensations of being poked or touched. Researchers observed that spikes in electromagnetism appeared to coincide with increased episodes of the disturbances and trace the cause to faults in the electrical wiring circuits. Now, this is something I've found as well, and here in Alberta, high levels of EMF are quite easy to come by in buildings and tech where the upkeep just hasn't been up to par. So far, there's no conclusive evidence that EMF is involved in producing paranormal activity. even though high levels can often produce what feels like a paranormal experience. To date, there's been no studies which have produced any evidence that spirits produce or manipulate electromagnetic fields, even though a stream of new devices appear online regularly, supported by, well, quite frankly, unsupported claims and unsubstantiated abilities. So why is that? Despite all the hardcore evidence to the contrary, why do these ghost hunting gadgets continue to make their presence known around the country? We talked to Phil Wyman of Are You Haunted to gain some perspective. Phil, thank you so much for being here today. We've been friends for quite a while now, and it's about damn time we've actually spoken properly.
Yeah, long time on Facebook. So yeah.
Oh yeah, it's crazy. So
nice to meet you.
Right. It's so ridiculous. But thank God for stuff like social media and whatnot for connecting people like this. It's so good. I'm so glad that you could be here, because speaking of Facebook, we were talking very recently about the crazy mint that has gone on with paranormal investigation hobbyist groups. Weird concepts, gimmicky concepts that they've come up with. So I'm really glad that we can sort of delve into this today, because Mike and I were actually just talking before the show about some of the things that have driven us nuts and some of the items over the years. But you've had a really long history of investigating places all over. You've seen a lot. What have you noticed in regards to the evolution of paranormal investigation, or rather people's perception of what it is?
The thing that stands out to me the most is the amount of gadgets that you see out there. Back in the day, obviously, it used to be like somebody used to take like a doctor's kit bag on an investigation. You're talking like Harry Price and stuff like that, and get out really basic things like a ball of cotton, a ball of string, or cat bells and things like that, and do the kind of generic experiments, which, the classic experiments. And nowadays it's just like full of gadgets, and it really does my head in, because none of the gadgets are actually scientifically proven to detect anything to do with the paranormal.
Yeah, they'll detect things, but just nothing to do with ghosts.
Exactly. It's like the EMF meter. I mean, whose theories are abound in this subject matter. As you know, it's theory this and theory that. And somebody came up with a theory that ghosts perhaps give off detectable energies by EMF meter. Well, the only thing an EMF meter does, I mean, it does what it says on the tin. It detects changes in electromagnetic field. But who came up with the theory that ghosts actually do the same thing and emit electromagnetic fields?
Right.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And it gets my goat.
When I hear EMF, I just think the song Unbelievable. So,
yeah. And that's kind of quite apt, really. But it's been one of my pet peeves for a long, long time. And it seems to have stuck in the imagination of people that, especially kind of new groups and new investigators that go on investigations, and it's kind of stuck in their minds that they have to get these kind of gadgets. And I think a lot of that has to do with the way it's perceived on television. And I know that you, Morgan, were having a moan about it on Facebook.
I totally was. And what drives me nuts is not only the lack of understanding about electromagnetic field meters. And I mean, I get how people have gotten this perception in terms of just, watching television and seeing these things used. And so they think, well, these people must know what they're doing, so that must be what they do. And of course, the misconception kind of just spirals. But what blows my mind is nobody seems to look into, okay, well, how did this association get going? And
exactly.
is this correct? What is it measuring? You throw the word Gauss or milligauss at the average Joe and they have no idea what you're talking about, except, okay, but you're using a meter to measure that. So
right.
Why would you not look that up? It just baffles me.
Yeah. Yeah. It always bugs me, because these gadgets that are out there, and it's like, how can you? I mean, to me, you can't create a gadget useful for detecting something that you've got no conception about how it works.
Exactly.
Right.
I mean, because surely you need the right parameters to put into a gadget that's going to help you detect what it's supposed to be detecting. Yeah. And we, as far as I'm concerned, unless something really drastic's happened in the last hour, nobody has got the parameters of a spirit or a ghost that they can put into a gadget to help that gadget detect if a spirit or ghost is there. So I don't know how that kind of whole part of the evolution in these gadgets seem to have been missed. It's like, I've got an idea for this, build it, but they've got no kind of thoughts about why they've built it and how they've built it, if that makes sense.
It does.
Completely. Yeah.
It's just crackers.
It is crackers. And it's funny because, you know, I think with these people, when they're considering this stuff, they're not considering, like you were saying, what is the meter calibrated to do? What is it calibrated to register? And it's not calibrated to register something that we don't understand, and we don't know what the spirit or whatever it is compiled of. And the one thing, like, I'm always talking about in my lectures and stuff like that is explaining that these EMF meters, they will register things like your fridge, yep, or your microwave.
Yep.
But if you turn around and turn that electromagnetic meter to yourself, that thing's not going off. Yep. It's like, it is not calibrated for anything other than exactly what it's picking up on. And I was doing a deep dive on a little bit about how this association actually started. And the only thing that I could really find was that there's been over the years the idea that high electromagnetics and paranormal phenomenon often tend to be present at the same time. And I know, like, there's been a number of cases that I've dealt with, even in Alberta, where there's been points at which we've gotten fluxes in the electromagnetic field that shouldn't have existed, and on properties that were really, really interesting, investigative wise. But somewhere along the line, it seems to have been conflated and correlated into that EMF signature is the paranormal activity, or it's causing the paranormal activity. And I'm not sure I don't know where that got blended. Do you think that's like TV? Was it
Ghostbusters?
Is that where that started? Ghostbusters? Yeah.
Let's face it. The basic fact is we don't even know if a ghost or spirit exists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have no definitive proof. Obviously we've had people that experienced what we class as paranormal activity or a ghost or a spirit, but we still don't have any scientific proof that ghosts or spirits exist. The kind of thing, just going off slightly off to one side, the kind of thing that interests me is if there is a time where it is scientifically proven that ghosts and spirits don't exist, then to me, that's even more fascinating, because what are people experiencing?
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
You know what I mean? It's not just a handful of people. It's, you know, countless people all over the world are seeing, yeah, these things.
They're experiencing something, but we just don't, exactly, understand what that is at this point.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's that question. I think is so interesting. It's so fascinating and so huge. And I kind of wonder if these types of gadgets or, you know, the things that give us sort of that immediate gratification. Cause I mean, as we know, like, nothing inside gives immediate gratification. You're often waiting for this stuff to happen for quite a long time, or it might not happen. And I often wonder if maybe that's what it is with some of these gadgets, is that despite whatever it is that they're picking up on, whether it be like radio signals or electronics or whatever, is that it's giving people that immediate gratification of like, see, there is something there. There is something there. Like, there's no inner work to be done with an electromagnetic field meter. You know, it's just something that lights up that can tell you yes or no, almost in the same way that the magic eight ball was doing that, you know. Yeah. People like flipping the magic eight ball. And I kind of wonder about that. And I kind of wonder if some of what people are getting when they're seeing, especially the simple meters like the K2s and things like that, I often wonder how much of it is psychokinetic. You know, you want something, you're focusing on something enough, and all of a sudden those lights start to move. Just a theory, but I've often wondered about that.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, of course, it's not just the EMF meters. It's all the other things like REM pods and stuff like that, which is kind of a similar thing, if you like. It's supposed to detect kind of static energy or electrical energy or that kind of thing. And I don't know. It's just, I mean, I used to run public ghost hunting events, and the general public love using the gadgets. Absolutely love using the gadgets. And before we used to go around and doing the investigation with them, I used to give a little talk at the beginning and explain what the bits of gadgets were. But I also explained the theory around it. And I also explained that at the end, you know, kind of bear in mind that none of these gadgets are proven to detect anything to do with spirits or ghosts.
Yeah.
You know, and again, we don't know if they exist. And by the end, I mean, we'd be on an investigation from like 9 o'clock until 4 in the morning. And probably from after the first couple of investigation vigils, nobody will be taking the equipment.
Yeah, because
they've kind of got to the kind of thinking that, you know, you might be right. It's much better, in my opinion, just to sit there by yourself and just listen out and pay attention to what's happening. We're big believers. I mean, I'm going to mention the Are You Haunted thing here.
And yeah, definitely.
The Are You Haunted show. We're big believers in going back to kind of basics and not using any of those gadgets, because if you think about it, the vast majority of people who experience a ghost or paranormal activity, et cetera, are doing so during their everyday run-of-the-mill lives. They're doing things like, you know, perhaps walking around a museum and taking in all the sights and everything, or walking around a castle, or, you know, things like that, or a mansion house. And they're not even thinking about ghosts or spirits. And that's what we're kind of trying to do. They're not walking around with a gadget. They're walking around with the self. Right. And the majority of people who experience things are just doing that. They're not walking around. They're not investigating. They're not, you know, they're just doing normal things. And I think that's one of the things why we went back to the basics, because, hey, we've done the gadgets thing. We did the gadgets thing for years and years. And, you know, when we sat down and thought, no, why would we want to use these? Because there's no merit for using them.
Yeah.
Well, and I think you hit the nail on the head with what you just said too, is that, just to get a little bit on the philosophical side, is you're not walking around with gadgets. You're walking around with self. Mm. And I think that you hit the nail on the head. It's that ability to be present. And even in parapsychology, as we've talked about before, we know that the ability to be present or to let your mind wander and to be in that relaxed state is the state you need to be in order to experience some of this stuff. Like, most of this stuff happens when you're not thinking about it, when you're in a relaxed state, you're doing something mundane and whatnot. And statistically, like, that's when this stuff begins to happen, not when your eyes are glued to a bunch of monitors or, you know, lighting up gadgets and things like that. So I agree.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, my wife, Sarah, she's a big believer in the fact that if you're looking at, like you just said, monitors constantly, or looking at your gadgets constantly, or doing this with this gadget, et cetera, you're going to miss what might be going on, because the gadgets aren't actually picking up on anything.
Yeah.
Because you're paying that much attention to the thing you've got in your hand that you're not paying attention to your surroundings, where you could miss something.
It's like the people who go to a concert and they have their phone held up recording the concert, and they're paying more attention to the recording that's going on rather than this experience that they've sometimes paid hundreds of dollars for.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't see the point. I mean, I can see the point in it, because they're looking for something as a piece of, something that they're going to remember for many years to come, right. And they want to capture it. But at the same time, like you said, that's not you're not getting the experience that you've paid for.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mike, you just brought up a great point. It is like selling these, it's like selling these concert tickets. And that brings up the question about the people selling this equipment.
Yes. Yeah. So I've made a list, an Amazon list, just for fun, of what is deemed to be ghost hunting equipment. And at the top of my list is, it just says, ghost hunting equipment, Brydia paranormal equipment tool with LED flashing and sound reminders designed for professional paranormal investigators. And so I thought, let's dig into this company, Brydia. What do they do? And we're not saying that their intent is bad or anything like that, but essentially they make electronics, obviously. But one of the things that they're best known for are chlorine generators for hot tubs and swim spas. So why not get involved in the paranormal as well? While we're at it, you know, ensuring that people's hot tubs are chlorinated, let's build a ghost hunting tool with five flashing lights on the top and a detachable antenna. And it's a box that it's an easy to use EMF detector. Very small and portable, takes up space, takes up no space, powered by four AA batteries, not include. So whoever wrote their copy is, maybe it's ESL, I don't know. Lower consumption, avoid frequent battery replacement, save time and worry, bring you a good use experience. So, you know,
because everybody needs to check their hot tubs for ghosts.
Right, exactly. And the there are a lot of these companies that are cashing in a big way. Like a ghost box, it originally was just a radio that people would be able to tune to different frequencies and hope to hear something, a spirit box. And now you're paying $200 for like just a crappy AM/FM radio that nobody has been able to sell otherwise. So let's sell it as a piece of ghost hunting equipment, and people will pick up on this.
Yeah, but it works. There are thousands of them out there, and somebody's got rid of their pretty useless AM/FM portable radios.
Yeah, this makes me nuts. Like this whole thing, it makes me crazy. I watch all these shows on Discovery, and I'm just thinking, what an uphill climb for people like yourself who really want to do paranormal investigation in a meaningful way. And it's not about entertainment. It's about like trying to discover what's out there.
Yeah, I could probably cope with it a lot better if it was just people, Joe Public, going and using them. But the fact that they're plastered on virtually every top rated paranormal show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is then forcing that kind of belief of their usage down the throats of the people that watch it. I think that kind of annoys me, though, is because they must know these people that are supposed to have like years of background experience. They must know that the gadgets that they're using aren't really worth the receipt that they've got for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And that's where it gets me, too, is at some point these people are going on TV or whatever, and they do know better. Like somebody somewhere knows better. And that part drives me crazy. Like, for example, this is one that I've noted. This is a little bit more of a recent one, but people using the video game systems and whatnot, which
oh,
use
don't
AI.
Start me on that.
Oh my gosh. So
what? What's
okay.
This?
So, yeah. Okay. So these game systems, what they do is they will cast out, they use like, now they're using AI and all sorts of things like that. Yeah. But they cast out grids basically. And what they're meant for is for the game to pick up on people so you can interact with the game. Right.
You're talking SLS cameras, aren't you?
Yes.
SLS
and,
stuff, yeah.
And but they are literally designed to connect like random dots to find human shapes, because that's literally what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to find people so you can interact with the game system. And what people are using them now for is, well, if they're meant to pick up on human form, then they're going to pick up on a spirit. If a spirit is in the room, and then it's going to connect all these dots as if all spirits still look like people. And they're supposed to hook up all these dots together and whatnot. But it's been shown like time and time again, even if you leave the system running with, you know, a vague outline of anything in the room that the camera system itself can pin together as a person, it will, because that's what they're designed to do. And so, again, it's one of these things that, like, I'm seeing on the shows, it's coming up and people are like, oh, no, no, see, it picked up because that's a person standing there. Well, no, it's, this is literally what these systems are designed for. You could put five pop cans on a table and they would probably link those five pop cans together if they were in the right shape.
I've got an experience about that.
Oh, do tell.
Perfect.
Which I thought, you know what, I'm going to have a look at this system. So I got one and messed about with it. And I finally got it. And this was in my bedroom at the time. And I set it up and kind of got the camera looking at me. And it was picking up me. And it was picking up stuff behind me. And to my extreme amazement, as it were, there was a stick figure behind me. I'm like, well, okay, that's interesting. And I turned around thinking, yeah, okay, what is this? I turned around and it was picking up my hoodie, which I'd hung over my exercise bike handle behind me. And it was picking that up as a person.
Wow.
So I thought, right, yeah, that's all I need to see. And I just stopped using it.
Yeah.
That's happened with my home security camera, too. It's like I'm out and about and it will trigger on, you know, exactly what you said, my hoodie, thinking that it's a human being, you know, and it's like I get this message, there's someone in your house. It's like, what?
Oh, oh God. Yeah.
Unless there is someone in your house.
Yeah.
What you need is an EMF meter.
Yeah, exactly. I should have that set up right beside the cat. Oh, the EMF meter didn't go off. It's just a hoodie.
Yeah, I think it's important though that we kind of give people their kind of space to and freedom to use those kind of bits of equipment if they want to use them. Obviously, because not everybody is of the opinion that we are. So it's. Yeah, I think it's obviously freedom of choice, but
they might be picking something up. They might be, but
yeah,
it's like Morgan was alluding to earlier. These things aren't calibrated for that specific thing because we don't know what that specific thing is.
Yeah, I mean, sure, they're picking something up, but it's what are they picking up? Is the thing. That's the big question.
Yeah.
Until somebody says, these are the parameters, build your piece of kit, and guaranteed you'll detect stuff. Until somebody says that, then we're just like staring into fog.
Yeah.
We've got no idea what's there.
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't agree more. And
I'm
buying
that one, though. If somebody makes that guarantee, I'm buying that.
Yeah. Well, what I found, too, I mean, when I still do go out on investigations and things like that, what I find is that the most helpful equipment, if I'm bringing anything, is stuff that allows me to understand the environment better. And my business partner years ago who passed away, she was an architectural technologist, and she would come out and not even necessarily, you know, with any sort of equipment or anything like that, but, you know, one of the reasons she was there was to take a really good look at the environment. You know, is the house settling? What's it sitting on? What, you know, what's going on within the building, you know, understanding some of this stuff. And so for me, what I always find is that, you know, if I'm going to bring anything, it's stuff that's going to allow me to understand exactly where I am a little bit better. And case in point, like here in Alberta, talking about EMF, one of the big issues with a lot of the buildings in Alberta is the high levels of electromagnetic fields really messing around with people's perception. And we get that quite frequently because a lot of the buildings either aren't up to code or we've got like transformers or whatnot that have been left behind that are still active, but they're cause people all sorts of different problems. But there's been a number of cases that I've worked on over the years where those types of things are dismantled and all of a sudden, oh, people aren't seeing things out of the corner of their eye anymore or having sleep problems or, you know, having issues that typically these super, super high levels of EMF can cause. So I found, like, in that regard, this stuff can be really, really helpful, you know, or just, you know, having a bunch of cameras set up to make sure we've got eyes on more than one spot or, you know, whatever. But I think we've really brought it home with the idea of, you know, let's, like keep the equipment in the category that they're used for. Because if you can do that, the stuff is really helpful. But if it's something that, you know, like electromagnetic field meters weren't built for ghost hunting. They just weren't. They were built for electricians.
So what you're saying, Morgan, is it can help to eliminate other things, but not necessarily
totally
detect the actual thing.
Totally. And like, I know here I've found that helpful. You know, do I think it's going to, can I sit there and talk to dead Aunt Mary with it? No. But do I think it can eliminate problems that could be causing other problems? Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. That's my personal experience with it. But I think what catches me about where we are with this whole ghost hunting equipment issue, is like what we were talking about where, you know, the stuff is getting misused. And then, and I don't know, Phil, if you found this, but if you try to explain it to somebody as to what the gear does, or if you ask a question about what the gear does, oftentimes people get really defensive.
Yeah, they do. It's the and I'm going to throw the cat amongst the pigeons here. It's the entire orb situation, but with gadgets.
Yeah. Oh boy, yeah.
Oh no.
When you try and politely say, obviously, because years of experience kind of tell you what these things are. But some people are just so stuck in the beliefs. For all I know, there might be things called or perceived as spirit lights, but what people kind of are saying are orbs. You can clearly see once you've had the experience in looking at thousands of pictures over the years, you know that it's actually dust that they're picking up, or it's the reflection of a dust particle. But you try and tell somebody that, and they'll take your head off most of the time.
Yeah, it's totally true. So for the let's talk about investigations that way, because when people want to delve into this, they want to get their hands dirty, they want to, you know, take a step into this. You know, maybe they're listening to this for the first time and realizing that, you know, these certain things maybe aren't the way that they want to go. What would you suggest their first step is in terms of delving into this field?
Literally, forget the gadgets. Forget the gadgets that are supposed to be designed for detecting spirits and ghosts, and just go with things that do what they say they do on the tin. For instance, take an audio recorder. Take an audio recorder,
sure,
with you. Take a camera with you. If you got a video camera, take a video camera. Just basically go back to basics with everything, and use your own sensors, and come to your own conclusions without something telling you that there is something in the corner, which, you know, a piece of gadget saying there's something in the corner, we all know that that's not going to be the case. So come to your own conclusions about your own experiences. I think that's the biggest thing. We're looking at thermal imaging cameras, basically just to see if there are any cold spots and hot spots and that kind of thing. But that's basically what it does. That's what it's designed for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not designed to detect ghosts or anything, but it's designed to detect environmental changes, which could be tied in with manifestations or possible paranormal activity.
Yeah, I think if we bring it back to that, then it makes sense to bring something like that along with you. Because, yeah, if you see
it, does what it says on the tin.
Exactly.
It's designed to detect what you're looking, using it for.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I think that's the key. Like, you know, like I was saying before, where if we can just keep the equipment doing what it's supposed to be doing instead of assigning it a job that it wasn't built for, I think that is such a helpful. It's such a helpful, I think, perspective on going into any of this. What when you're doing Are You Haunted, which is a freaking phenomenal show, people, if you guys have not seen it, we're putting it in our show notes.
Thank you very much.
You gotta watch it. It's so well done. Oh yeah, so well done. When you're packing a bag to go to one of these places, Phil, what's in your bag? What do you take?
Audio recorders. Again, very much, you've still got to analyze anything you get with these pieces of kit that I'm going to detail in a moment. You've still got to analyze what you get with it. So yeah, we take audio recorders, and they're top, you know, professional audio recorders, really good quality. We take video cameras. We take action cameras, and basically that's probably the main kind of kit bag that we take with us. We don't take anything like really old. I thought we've got a CCTV monitoring system that we set the cameras up around, and basically that's it.
Yeah.
There's nothing over the top gadgets, because we don't use, we certainly don't use anything like Ouija boards or divination devices and that kind of thing. Right. But that's basically the gadgets that we use.
That makes sense. Eyes on the floor. More eyes, boots on the ground, eyes on the floor. Yeah.
Exactly. That's it. Yeah.
I think you're about to say what I'm going to ask is like, what's your method of ghost hunting? How do you go to how do you start this? Like when you enter a place that you think might be haunted?
Well, first off, we get some background information from the people that are associated with the venue. That's really important, especially if they've got experience of possible paranormal activity in the venue. And then we kind of aim to set up the CCTV cameras and the vigil areas in those specific areas that we've been told are the best areas you might experience your chances of capturing something. And then we just split up into little teams of two. There's only about six of us in the Are You Haunted team, and we split up into three teams of two, take a vigil area each, and that is, you've got a camera with you, video camera, infrared video camera, and we just sit there, film what's happening, talk, chat amongst ourselves, ask out if there's anything there, if there is something there, such as a spirit, to come forward if they can, and et cetera, et cetera. And that's all we basically do. There's nothing over the top.
It makes perfect sense to me. I know one of the techniques that I've had really amazing luck with over the years in regards to a plethora of different phenomenon is actually addressing and inviting whatever it is in on its own accord. And yep. last fall, a colleague of mine and I, we were doing a series of workshops and whatnot. What we would do every night before it would start is that we'd go out, because she's got a huge property, and the whole property has had activity on it. And we would go out into the property and just kindly invite whatever it was, if they wanted to participate and come hang out, that they are, loved and more than welcome to do so. And every single night it was a plethora of activity that was going on. And the groups got to experience it. It was really cool. But I really attribute a lot of that to the approach that we took, which was, just saying, you're just welcome to come hang out. I don't know what you are, but whatever it is, you're just welcome to come join us and hang out. Here's what we're doing. And it seemed to be really effective.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you need to be, and there's a lot of people out there that probably aren't, or certainly not as much as they should be. You need to be respectful.
Yeah.
Because obviously if there are spirits out there of deceased people, they're exactly that. They are people, and you need to be respectful of that.
Yeah, and I think not treat them as spooky. I think that helped as well. Where it was the invitation for us didn't come as, okay, is there anybody there? Can you please move this chair? Like, we weren't doing that either. I think there was sort of a relaxed vibe about, we'd love to have you if you want to be there. And,
yeah.
I think that really, really made a difference. The other thing that I noted, and I don't know whether you've had this experience as well, but I know when Stephanie and I first started 20 odd years ago, we kind of went into it in the same way they initially went into the Philip experiment in Ontario, where everybody was, being very stoic and silent and serious and whatnot.
Serious,
and we'd walk out with nothing. And as soon as we added the factor of being happy and joyful and having fun, bam, activity would go through the roof. Have you found that too?
Yeah, I mean that is one of the basic principles of the show. Sarah thought of the show. Obviously, my wife Sarah came up with the idea for the show, and we wanted to make it interesting and enjoyable, even if we weren't getting an awful lot of activity, if any at all. And the people on the show are really, really good friends we've known for a long time, and we've got such a great chemistry. That we always seem to be up for the investigation. We always seem to have a laugh while we're there, you know, respectful, not taking the mic out of anything. And we seem to get lots and lots of things happening. Small things, but some small things are massive when it comes to investigating.
Yeah.
People seem to think, oh yeah, well, you only got a knock, or you only heard a single word or something like that. But then you think, yeah, that's great. But where did that single word come from? Exactly. Where did that knock come from? You know, there's only four of us, five of us in the building, the entire building. So nobody is around. And in the corner of the room where you sat, you've got a knock or a noise, a vocal noise coming from there. And you're like, so, yeah. So, you know, you have to think about what you've just said there. We've got something. Where does it come from? But yeah, because we're kind of so jovial, if you like, and we do enjoy a bit of a laugh with each other while we're there, and obviously get down to the serious things as well. But I think because we've got that energy about us, we do kind of experience things. And I think the whatever might be out there kind of senses the relaxed atmosphere, if you like, and thinks, you know, I'm going to get involved with this group here, these guys. And so, yeah, we've got some really interesting incidents when we go on these investigations.
So for people who haven't seen this show, Are You Haunted? Can you sort of tell us about one specific incident that really stands out in your mind? I don't mean to put you on the spot. But...
there's quite a few. Let me think. Right. Okay. In the last series, we went to a theatre in Durham, in the northeast of England. And there was myself and Sarah sat on the stage, and the rest of the team were in different parts of the building. And Sarah and myself were at the CCTV monitors in front of us. So we're on the CCTV hub, as we call it, looking at the screen, looking out into the seating area of the theater and the stairs that come down on each side. And we were both looking around, and I'm not kidding, something about 5 foot tall, about foot and a half, 2 feet wide, from halfway down the stairs, a pillar, all I can call it is a pillar of undulating light, came down, floated down the stairs, down the side of the theater stairs, towards the stage. And that was absolutely phenomenal. It was white, but it was like a smoky, undulating, smoky thing, pillar that came down, pillar of light, about 5 feet or so tall.
Wow.
And it was there for about 2 seconds, and it glided down, and it was absolutely amazing.
That's the stuff you live for.
Exactly, yeah. And it kind of surprised me that way. It kind of actually scared me a little bit, if that makes sense. And yeah. I was a bit like shocked because I wasn't expecting it. Yeah. Because that's how much we were kind of into the zone of just looking around us and trying to pay attention and things. And then suddenly it's just like, whoa, what's that?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. But, yeah. Well, it's so funny that you mentioned that, because I had an incident with a really dear friend of mine I was actually in Vancouver. And we had been sitting around a hotel room. And this is another example of just how important this joy factor is. Mm. And it was Halloween night. This was a number of years ago. And we were sitting around and we got laughing about something. And I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, the two of us couldn't breathe. We were in tears. I mean, it was just crazy. Anyway, we both ended up falling asleep. It was really late. And he woke me up, and I didn't realize what had gone on. I just kind of woke up, and he woke up, and he was like talking to somebody at the door, the bathroom door, like laying in his bed, but talking to somebody at the bathroom door. And I'm like, the heck is he talking to? Like, is somebody at the door? And I'm kind of half asleep, and turns
the light on or whatever. And he was like, still talking to this person. And he was like, are you okay? Like, what are you doing? Are you all right? And I'm like, what the heck is, anyway, I was like, hey, you know, who are you talking to? Scared the hell out of him. So it was so funny. It just floored him. He turned around, looked back at the door and said, okay, what the hell? I literally just was talking to somebody at the door that looked like you. And he had, Marky. Yeah. And it just floored the two of us. But it was from that moment on, we had a bunch of other things happen as well. I had been doing something. I can't remember. I'd gone into the bathroom or something like that. And the door in my room opened on its own. The bathroom door opened on its own. I had like a number of things go on. But it was it seemed to be stemming from that night of us just laughing until we couldn't laugh anymore. And it was really, really interesting. And for me, it just sort of solidified that fact you want to experience some of this stuff, get really, really happy.
That kind of ties in with something that we experienced on one of the episodes. There was myself and Jane, who's obviously one of the team members on the show. We were upstairs in an attic. We're having a bit of a laugh, to be fair, because I got the infrared camera, and you know how the camera's got a little red light on them, and I could see the red light reflected in a, this is pitch black, obviously, I could see the red light reflected in a window behind Jane. And I'm like, come on, look at this, because this was really scary. It was like the thing on Amityville Horror, where it's Jodie, the weird demon thing, is outside the window with the red eyes. Can you remember that bit?
I totally remember that bit.
And I said, come here, it looks weird, looks like that. And she came over and had a bit of a laugh. And just as she walked back to her seat, she looked out of the door of the attic, which looks into another room. And she turned around, looked out the attic door, and stood in the door of the other room was a man wearing a kind of a pork pie hat, as she described it. But she described it as being like, she says, you know how Van Gogh does his paintings? It's like all like patchy and things like that and smeary and stuff. It was like that. She said it was gray and black in like a weird patchy kind of Van Gogh-y style painting. And as soon as she looked at it, it was there for literally a split second, and then it vanished. But it scared the life out of her, scared the life out of me, because she actually like jumped. It's like, oh my God, you know,
wow.
I've just seen something. And I says, what is it? And she said, I've just seen a man stood in the door. And it's like really, really. But again, literally a moment before, we were having a bit of a giggle about something.
Yeah. Well, strange. It's totally cool. And it's so interesting to me, because you even look at experiments like in Ontario, like the Philip experiment, and that's exactly what they found was, you know, everything for them was, it was, nothing was working. They weren't getting any responses at all. And then all of a sudden they added that joy factor in, and bam, they started to get this activity. It was like they were resonating with whatever that was, and stuff started to happen. It's just the neatest thing. And I think it's an aspect of the paranormal. I know I've talked about it like crazy, but the idea that so much of this stuff happens when we're in a good headspace, and when stuff starts to go on, it's when we're, you know, able to let go. It's when we're able to meditate. It's when we're, you know, all of these different factors that, you know, have been found, you know, like what we've talked to people, I don't know how many people now, Mike, about this, but that seems to be when it happens.
Well, it's interesting that it seems like it also happens when you're not trying to force it to happen. If you're really focused on making it happen, it's less likely somehow. And I've noticed that in all kinds of aspects of my life when it comes to manifestation. I don't want to go down this rabbit hole too deeply, but I think it's that whole idea that, you know, what you focus your, if you're so focused on the lack of this thing, like, well, I want to see a ghost. I want to see a ghost. I want to see a ghost. I want to see something. And then you don't see anything, and then you and your pal are just joking around after you've had that thought, that real honest thought, that's when something happens.
Totally.
It's very strange. It's very, very strange.
Yeah. That I think, if I look at it, that from the investigations we've done on the series, more often than not, we've had an episode where we've absolutely been in floods of tears with laughter. Because either something's gone wrong with the filming, or I've gotten what I'm supposed to be saying halfway through re-saying it, and everybody just creases up. And I can honestly say that virtually every episode, something like that has actually happened, and that might actually be playing into the getting activity coming forward, and the interaction.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah, I think our intent and our joy. I'm a firm believer that, I mean, joy, no matter what, is the catalyst for things pouring into our experience on like so many different levels. And I really, really think that the paranormal is one of those things. And I look back at researchers like Dr. Scott Rogo and Dr. William Roll and all these people that really took that hard look at the correlation of emotion and paranormal activity. And every time I talk to people like you, Phil, it just really emphatically drives it home for me that there's this incredible connection there. It's amazing.
Totally.
It's just amazing. Yeah. Well, this has been awesome.
It has. And again, I think it's all a state of what your mind is in, I think.
Big time.
And by that, I mean, the happier you are, or the more kind of joyful, if you like, you are, I think that opens more and more possibilities for you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, we found that over the years as well. Well, this has been so great. And thank you so much for this conversation, because it was a conversation we needed to be had so badly. And yeah. I'm so grateful that we could do it. But before we let you go, tell people about Are You Haunted, where they can see it, and where they can pick up your book as well, because your book is really great and it gets into some of this stuff too. So let everybody know what's up.
Well, first off, it's been brilliant. So thank you very much, guys. Are You Haunted is broadcast on Pluto TV, and it's free-to-air broadcasting platform, so it doesn't cost you anything to watch it. You can also get it on YouTube. I think all the series 1, 2, and 3 are on YouTube, so look out for that. We're also on Facebook. If you want to have a look on Facebook, Are You Haunted? And we will, this is for people out there who are going to be listening, who have seen the show, we will be starting filming series 4 very, very soon.
Woohoo!
Fun.
Woohoo. And it's going to be different, slightly different. Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting. I'm looking forward to that, because, yeah, your stuff's always so, so great. So, Phil, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. Been great talking to you guys. Fantastic. Thank you.
Here's Morgan for this episode's segment of Spiritual Healthcare.
In this episode's edition of Spiritual Healthcare, the segment of the show where you get to be the creator and designer of your paranormal and spiritual experience, we're going to tell you about a process called What Good News process. This is a great process for anyone who is struggling with focusing on the positive, and comes from our good friend at the Monroe Institute, Mark Serto. This is an exercise in perspective shifting, and it begins with an unexpected question. What bad news is occurring in my life right now? Sometimes that question is a little too easy to answer. The next question then becomes, what is standing in opposition to it? Another way to word this is, what's the silver lining? Your answer may look something like, well, fortunately, blank is occurring, and then include something great about the blank. This doesn't have to be something that is currently part of the circumstance. This is usually where people get hung up. And it could, in fact, be something occurring in the future. Remember, there is no past or future, only the present moment. Get creative with it. As Mark and the Monroe Institute teach, one of the best ways to neutralize negative thinking and overcome hopelessness is to use the imagination to create something positive. What are you imagining? Give it a try. and watch what comes. You need nothing to be happy, but you need something to be sad. And remember, at the end of seeking, all is consciousness. Stay in peace, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Supernatural Circumstances, a co-production of Entity Seeker Paranormal Research and Teachings and Good Egg Studios. This podcast is part of the Curious Cast podcast network. Theme music by Corey Johnson of Catalyst Records in Edmonton, Alberta. You can find out more about Morgan Knudsen at entityseeker.ca and more about me and listen to my other show at darkpoutine.com. Feel free to email the show at supernaturalcircumstances@gmail.com. Good night for now.